If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Barnyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, coming to you a little bit early with the Friday Boneyard. Many of you are listening to this early Friday morning or late Thursday night. This will be a two-parter. We've got some things to do today. Mississippi State and Ole Miss will play on the soccer pitch. I plan to go cover that. But in addition to that, you know, we got to pack and we got to get ready to leave. Tomorrow's a travel day for us as we head to the Lone Star State of Texas. Friday night, we'll be taking in Mississippi State commitment Camden Capehart and Winsboro High School against Minola High School. Probably the first time that anybody from a national network has covered a football game at Minola High School, I would suspect. That's probably the case. But we'll be there, and we'll have coverage for you Saturday morning ahead of the game. Already kind of writing some things for tomorrow to kind of cover us while we travel. But, yeah, busy weekend for your good friend and host. We'll get back with you on Monday. Probably be getting back in the wee hours Sunday morning. We'll just kind of see how things go. I'm not going to kill myself out there. I get out and go. I'm a road warrior. I like to drive at night. Shorter lines at the truck stops. I don't drink a lot of coffee in my day-to-day activity, so when I do drink it, it's highly effective. Kind of got a low tolerance for that. But anyway, I do enjoy driving at night, easier on the car, less traffic, you know, all's good with that. So we'll go as far as we can. If we need to get a room, we will. We'll get one tomorrow night too. But we'll bring you full coverage from College Station, Texas. This is Mississippi State, Texas A&M. I wanted to also, I'm not sharing news, but I wanted to kind of frame this up a little bit. Our friend Lisa Ship Lake, a dogged Mississippi State reporter, if there ever was one. She's not a reporter. She was a supporter. My first interaction with Lisa was on the Flim Flam book tour. Lisa married an Ole Miss guy. At least he has good taste in women, right? But they had a very good-natured relationship about the state Ole Miss thing. And it was interesting. Lisa told me a story that whenever her and all of her state fans' friends would get together and he would be present, he would make this comment, "Oh, y'all quit messing with my boys." And so whenever I signed her first copy of Flim Flam, and she got a handful of them as gifts for other people, but she had me sign it, "I'm not going to quit messing with your boys." You know, it's just kind of a funny thing. And she got our picture made together. The next time I saw her, she brought that picture of us together with her first copy of Flim Flam and had me sign it. And then when we had the Washington Post came and spent a day with me during the book tour, and they went to Lemuria Books. They came to Stargirl, spent some time with me, and then met me down at Lemuria Books. We had a author reading and signing. It was a packed house. And lo and behold, the Washington Post interviewed Lisa Lake. Yeah, of all the people, right? I have had a lot of tremendous supporters in my writing career. I have had few greater than Lisa Lake. Every year that I signed in the central Mississippi area, she came and brought friends and supported me. And I felt that I owed it to her, to her friends, to her family, to share how special she was to me. But it was kind of an unfortunate situation, and she just had some health problems. Just kind of popped up out of nowhere, and sadly, she passed away on Thursday, October 2nd. And Lynn McAlpin reached out to me, and I love Lynn and her sister, Joy. Joy also married an Ole Miss guy, you know. I mean, can you blame them, right? But all that understood, you know, we're all getting older, And we're not promised anything. One of the things that I share with you all the time is none of us are promised that little bedside vigil where everybody gathers around and we say goodbye and we hold hands and tell each other that we love them and then we pass away. Well, nobody's guaranteed that. Nobody is guaranteed that. And so it's important to tell people you love them now and to tell them that you support them now, because we're not promised tomorrow. And unfortunately, we talk about that a lot on the show. I'm getting older too. You know, it seems like every time I turn around, man, somebody from back home is passing away. You know, it would be an accident or sometimes nefarious circumstances. Other times, just life, man. It just happens. None of us are guaranteed anything. Not even the next breath, much less the next day, the next year. And there's so many things that happen. It's like people, the old adage, like life happens when you're busy making other plans. There's some truth in that. It's important to enjoy every day and see it as a gift. And the older that I get, the more that matters to me. I begin to think about that aspect of it, that every day truly is a gift. Because I can promise you those that love Lisa Lake would do almost anything to have just one more day with her. And I'm grateful that Lisa got to see us get off to a great start to football season this year. And as I sent Joy earlier, Joy Kellum, I said, you know, we couldn't have a better advocate for our Bulldogs in heaven than Lisa Lake. She will bug them to death. She will stand before the throne of God saying, God, it's Mississippi State's time. You know, she will advocate for us. I don't know that we could have a better representative in the pearly gates than Lisa Lake. And again, I'm very, very grateful to have become acquainted with her and called her a friend for the last 8 years of my life. And I think that's an important part of it too, and I wish that I would have told her that when she was living. I do. But for those of you that know her and her family, you let them know on my behalf. I'm a grateful Mississippi State family. We're very, very, very appreciative of all of her support over the years of our Bulldogs, more personally of my work in the Boneyard, and she was just simply a great person. And I'm very sad about it. I am. I'm very sad because I know the next time that I go sign at Lemuria Books, I won't see her. You know, there were times that she would come even if she already had books and she'd buy them for other people, or, you know, she found out I would be down there, just would want to come say hello. I mean, she's just that quality of a person. You know, she told me countless times how important the work I was doing was and how Mississippi State fans deserve to have books written about their favorite players and years and seasons and sports. And so those are the things that I tend to focus on. You know, not the naysayer type voices. I've just matured to a point now where I just don't give those folks a lot of credence. You know, there's a lot of jealousy in the world. There is. But Lisa Lake wasn't one of those people. She's one of those kinds of people that that saw life in a very positive light. And we talk about like some people light up a room. I don't know that Lisa lit up a room, but she certainly loudened up a room, if you know what I mean. To know her is to know that. Like, she is just one of those kinds of people that when she spoke, her voice carried, and when she laughed, it was very infectious. And so I wanted to get that out there today because I know many of you know her and love her and her family, and be sure and love on them in the days, months, and years ahead. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of the show. We love Bulldog Burger Company because they take care of us. Right? There's just so many times in life you just want a quality meal. I went somewhere recently and I had bad service. And I'm thinking, why do I do this to myself, right? The food's not that good to have to wait and wait and wait for service and, you know, wait to make your order and wait to get your check. And, you know, there's a lot of things in the restaurant business that can be a bit of an inconvenience. You just don't get that at Bulldog Burger Company. They're very efficient in what they do. It's a great place to eat. It's a great place to work. Remind you, as always, too, many of you have people that you love that are students at Mississippi State. It's a great gift. Get them one of those Eat With Us gift cards. You can get it at Bulldog Burger specifically, or you can get one they can use at any of the family of restaurants with the Eat With Us group. Go to eatwithus.com and you can find the gift cards there. I would encourage you to do that. Be the favored parent, uncle, aunt, grandparent by giving your Mississippi State student the gift of a great meal. And there are a few finer than you're going to get at Bulldog Burger Company. Get the spring rolls as your appetizer. That is a must. Makes you and everybody around you better looking. And then drink that chocolate shake on the ride home. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Find your own favorites. If you're not feeling a burger, they have the best salad in town. I get the BLT. I like it grilled. You may like it fried. I'm not judging. Live life as you choose. But whatever you've got a hankering for, you can just about satisfy any craving at Bulldog Burger Company. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay, we're going to get started. It's an abbreviated schedule this week, so you guys won't have to flip around too much. It kind of lays out pretty good. But it's interesting. We have three games kicking off within 30 minutes of each other. Which, you know, I'm not an ESPN programmer, but I think I probably could have spaced that out a little bit better. Just me, right? You want to monopolize the airwaves, then don't have three games going on at the same time. Just my feeling. But our day is going to get started on Saturday as Kentucky will visit Georgia. If I'm a struggling Kentucky team, I think the last place that I want to be this weekend is in Athens, Georgia, after they dropped that game to Alabama. Now, looking back at Kentucky's season, they're 2-2 right now. They've won a couple non-conference games. They've lost their only two SEC games. They beat Toledo 24-16, and that was a barn burner of a game. You know, Toledo had the lead for a while and just couldn't close it out. They lose at home to Ole Miss in a weird game, like it always is, 30-23. They beat Eastern Michigan, made the quarterback change, and then they get beat last week or 2 weeks ago very well. By South Carolina. And so they're at Georgia. And you start thinking about, you start counting games if you're a Wildcats fan, right? You got to get to six. You got two now. How do you get to six? Well, the good news is you have Tennessee Tech later in the year. So we'll go ahead and count that as a dub. That gets you to three. You got to find three more. You're going to be on the road at Louisville, in the rivalry game. That's a toss-up, but even if we give them that one, that gets them to four. You got to find two more in the SEC slate, and I think it's going to be tough. You got Georgia, that's a loss. You got Texas, I think that's a loss. You got Tennessee, I think that's a loss. So then it boils down to winning two of these three, in my estimation. You got to go to Auburn, which is a very difficult place to play. You're home against Florida. You have had some success against them in recent years. And then you go to Vanderbilt. Now, ordinarily you'd say, well, that's probably going to favor Kentucky. But the way Vanderbilt's playing, I think it's going to be difficult for Kentucky to make a bowl game. Now, they were not projected by many people to be bowl eligible this year. But I think Mark Stoops may be in a bit of trouble. May be in a little bit of trouble here. Georgia, of course, you know, a team that's expected to contend for the SEC championship and certainly a playoff spot. They open up 3-1. They get Marshall, Austin Peay, and Tennessee. And even that game in Knoxville was a wild one. And Tennessee may be kind of learning how to win these close games. They win that one 44-41. But Tennessee had trouble closing. They did a better job against Mississippi State. And then, of course, last week Alabama beats Georgia 24-21. And so you start running through this if you're Georgia, and you think you're going to be favored probably in every game the rest of the way. Probably. You get Kentucky, that should be a win. Then you got to go to Auburn. That game is, you know, that's a big one for Auburn, too. Then you get Ole Miss at home, Florida at Mississippi State, and then Texas and Charlotte. So, again, outside of that Ole Miss game, and I think it's fair to say Ole Miss is probably exceeding expectations, and that Texas game, you ought to be able to handle most of these. You ought to be. But this Georgia team may not be quite as good as we thought. I think they will be this weekend. I think they take care of business. The line is 20.5. I think Georgia gets that and probably a little more. I just don't think Kentucky can score, and I think Georgia's defense can make them very one-dimensional. Now, a battle between two teams that had the weekend off last weekend, Texas and Florida. And again, this whole thing with Texas is interesting, right? Texas is a road favorite, nearly a touchdown favorite in Gainesville. Texas ranked number 9. But let's be honest, are you sold on Texas and that offense with Arch Manning? And again, to be fair to Arch, you know, the fact that they were preseason number 1 with basically a brand new starter with very limited reps under his belt, that's probably a little bit foolhardy in hindsight. They dropped that game to Ohio State, and then they beat San Jose State, don't cover. They beat UTEP, don't cover. And then they beat Sam Houston and cover. That's first one of the year. So they're going to Florida, and again, favored by 6.5. That's going to be very interesting. The Florida defense is very, very athletic. I'm just curious to see what's happened, what wrinkles both teams have put in. What are they going to do with Lagway? The Texas secondary's got some speed on the backside, too. So Texas can match up with the secondary. We're going to pick Texas to win. And then from there, kind of looking ahead for Texas, it's a pretty good schedule the rest of the way. Pretty good. So Oklahoma, Red River Shootout, that's going to be a tough one. It is. Then you got to go to Kentucky, then to Mississippi State, then Vanderbilt in Austin, then you got to go to Georgia, and you get Arkansas, and then A&M. So I would submit to you, Texas is probably favored in every one of these games, except for maybe the Red River Shootout and the game of Georgia. Right? So you start kind of thinking about long-term, what are the SEC's prospects of making the playoff and then make a run? I think this week Texas takes care of Florida. Then what does Scott Strickland do? Right? Does Scott Strickland, you know, who has made multiple statements kind of in support of Billy Napier, does Florida make a change in leadership? I think it's one of these things, too. You're coming off the open date. You got another one later, but you begin to think about that aspect of it. It's like, you know, I get maybe not doing it now because, you know, you're 4 games in. Like, if you fire him during the open date, then you're going to have a bunch of players opt out and just take a redshirt year and then go get in the portal and transfer out and really kind of decimate your roster. So I kind of understand that line of thinking. You get through Texas, then maybe you could make a move and not worry about losing the majority of your roster. Maybe. At least you can navigate the season without having a bunch of opt-outs. But they got to go to A&M. And then they host Mississippi State, and then you have Georgia. And so you begin to think about the dynamics behind all this stuff. You know, Florida, again, kind of like Kentucky, in the eyes of many, were not projected to be a bowl team. I think most people had them 5-7. And let's just assume these next couple are losses. And who knows what kind of shape they're going to be in when we get there. Who knows? Then you get Georgia. But let's just kind of assume right now, just on paper, what games do you think they lose? Well, I think they lose Texas, Texas A&M, Georgia, Ole Miss in Oxford, Tennessee, and Florida State. I think they lose all those games. So you're looking at an absolutely dreadful season, arguably the worst in the Billy Napier era in Florida, and that's saying a lot. And so, like Jeremy Foley used to say, a guy that Scott Strickland knows well, you know, why put off to tomorrow what needs to be done today? You know, whatever has to be done eventually might as well be done now. So I think we could see a chance. I'd rather see him fire him after Texas rather than A&M. I don't want to face a rejuvenated Florida team that is out from under the dark cloud of the Billy Napier experience before we play him. Because you know how that works. It's like the old Cadillac Williams thing, right? The players get all jacked up and say, what not us? Vanderbilt at Alabama. Who knew this was going to be a mark?
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Game. Who knew beginning of the year this would be a 2:30 game? And I guess Texas and Florida are on ESPN, but Vanderbilt and Alabama, that's a national broadcast at 2:30. Alabama's favored by 10.5. I, you know, the thing that I consider is Alabama has had to hear about that Vanderbilt loss for a year. And if you watch that game like I did, man, everything Vanderbilt did seemed to be kind of herky-jerky. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like every pass was just, you know, fingertip catch or guy misses a tackle here. It wasn't like Vanderbilt just simply out-executed them. I just thought Vanderbilt proved to be tougher than Alabama. And so I think Alabama's had to hear about that for a year. Now you get these guys back in your neck of the woods. There's no way you're going to overlook them. They're an undefeated top 20 team. And they beat you last year. And you have been berated for a year's time about losing that game. Now give Clark Lee and the Commodores a lot of credit. They got Alabama up at their place, and they beat them for the first time in a long time. And there was a stretch there where Alabama and Vanderbilt were permanent opponents. And don't think that it didn't have anything to do with all the Alabama alums in Birmingham, but it's true. But when you start thinking about Vanderbilt, you know, it's like there used to be a time where we start counting games at the beginning of the year, saying, is it possible that Vandy could get eligible? And you're like, well, you got this four non-conference game. No, they're going to go 4-8. Maybe they go 5-7. Maybe. Well, now you look up there 5-0, and offensively they are playing elite football. Elite. Gave up a couple touchdowns late last week against Utah State to cost them a cover. But offensively, they have been absolutely outstanding. But the month of October is going to define their season. They're at Alabama, they host LSU, they host Missouri, and then they're at Texas. That's four teams currently ranked in the top 20. But if you're Vanderbilt, if you split those games, you win two, you're already at 7 wins. Yeah, let that sink in for a second. Then you got Auburn, Kentucky, and then at Tennessee. Who knows what shapes Auburn's going to be in by the time they roll into Nashville? That'll be a big game. Kentucky's got to go in there. And I would say right now, if you had to pick between Vandy, Auburn, and Kentucky based on what we know about each team, I think you count those as Vandy wins. Is it inconceivable that Vandy can win 9 games this year? Absolutely not. They can absolutely do it. It's incredible. Then you look at the Alabama side of things. Of course, a lot of people are ready to fire Kalen DeBoer. You know, they call in the Paul Feinbaum show and get crazy. They lose a game to Florida State. You got to get out of here. Well, then they thrash you on Monroe. They beat Wisconsin. I thought that game was going to be closer than it proved to be. And then they go into Athens, Georgia, and beat Georgia. That's a loud win, no matter who the coach is in Tuscaloosa. So after this week, they got to go to Missouri. That'll be interesting. And then it's the third Saturday in October, which is the lamest tradition that we have in the Southeastern Conference, that every sport in every SEC school in every season is impacted by, which is a joke. And then we got South Carolina on the road, LSU at home, Oklahoma at home, then Eastern Illinois before you play the Iron Bowl. And so you start looking through this. I would not get too busy patting myself on the back if I'm Alabama because, again, you've got five top 20 opponents in your next 6 games, and the one that's not a top 20 opponent is the road trip to Williams-Brice. That's proven to be more difficult in recent years than other people around this league. Kent State is at Oklahoma. The spread's 44.5. The only question in this game is, will Oklahoma cover? I don't know if you guys have kept up with the Golden Flashes. You know, that's where Lou Holtz and Nick Saban both went to school. But they're 1-3. They beat Merrimack in week 1. Then they lose to Texas Tech. They lose to Buffalo. And they lose to Florida State. Both games against Power 4 opponents have been absolute blowouts. I suspect that's the case this week, too. Don't have the manpower, right? Power 4 opponents are averaging 64 points against the Golden Flash defense, while they're averaging a dozen points. So if it works out to be about that, yeah, Oklahoma should cover with some change. But you start thinking about Oklahoma's prospects. You know, I remember joking beginning of the year, there were a lot of people that said Castiglione wanted to be able to, you know, leave with Oklahoma making the playoffs. And I'm thinking, playoffs? Kind of Jim Moore voice. Are you kidding me? But now all of a sudden I look at this and say, you know what? Maybe it's true. Now, They have not really gotten into the meat of the schedule. They beat Michigan 24-13. And I know some people think Michigan's a great team. I don't know. So they're going to be 5-0 after this week. But, man, the second half of the schedule is brutal. You know about the Red River Shootout. Then you've got to go to South Carolina. Then you get Ole Miss at home. You're at Tennessee. You're at Alabama. You host Missouri. And then you get LSU. So after this Kent State game, you got some hay to cut, right? And six of those seven opponents are all ranked in the top 20. So in the event that Oklahoma navigates this schedule with 10 wins, I don't think you have any choice but to put them in the playoff. They will have earned it. That's a 3 p.m. kick on the SEC Network. And then your other game is going to be Mississippi State and Texas A&M. We've talked about that extensively. We're going to touch on that a little bit later in the show. But, I think, again, it's an abbreviated schedule. But I don't think that there is much question about who should win these games, with a couple of exceptions. Georgia's going to win. It's just going to be about how much. I think Texas wins at Florida, but, man, it would not surprise me in the least. Like, if we look up and Florida's up two touchdowns at the half, I would not be surprised. They're going to do some things to kind of try to confuse Arch Manning. Vanderbilt at Alabama, I think Alabama's going to do this. I just don't think – I think Vandy is marked. Big Al has been thinking about the Commodores for a year. And, of course, Oklahoma's going to beat Kent State. And some would say that Mississippi State A&M is a toss-up. I don't know that I agree. Could be. I hope so. But it's an abbreviated week, and so you'll get a chance to see a lot of the games. There won't be a lot of question about what's going on around the league. But that's an important aspect, I think, just to kind of keep up with all this. But we need some big things to happen for us, for sure. All right, it's time for our Close with Blair Player of the Day. It's going to be Seydou Traoré, and I'll explain to you why shortly. But before we do, let's give a shout-out to our sponsor, Blair Chandler. Visit his website, closewithblair.com. You can call him direct at 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. Just save that number on your phone as mortgage guy, because you never know when you're going to need him. You can call or text him direct. You don't have to go through a call center or receptionist or anything like that. We give you the direct line here. So Blair works at Priority One Mortgage. He's been there a couple years now. The same level of service has followed him there, doing better work than ever. So if you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, Blair is the only name to know. Don't overthink it. Don't complicate matters. Stick with a winner. Thus the name Close with Blair. Whether you're looking to refinance, looking to buy a home, you know, this is the way to go. And the life hack that they don't tell you about, get the pre-qualification letter. Get that letter and get your real estate agent extremely motivated, because then they know exactly what your financing is approved for. That's save you some time and effort, for sure. And some heartache, for sure. But Seydou Traoré, I think, is going to be big in this ball game, because the A&M pass rush is pretty good. It is. We're going to need him to be a lead blocker, but also, too, I think, to be a real target out in the pass pattern, because as those linebackers begin to get downhill, Seydou is a guy that I think can make some plays for us. Seydou's been kind of up and down at times. Also got a couple big touchdowns for us. And I think this could be kind of a breakout game for him. I think he could be a big part of things as we look to check things down. A lot of times we swing it out to the backs, but I think the best chance against A&M is to go right at them. I don't think you're going to outrun them to the edge. And so I think you need Seydou to kind of soften some things up. Those are my feelings. Your Close with Blair Player of the Day. Okay, interesting top 10 list today brought to you by Kalido Guitars. C-A-L-I-D-O guitars.com. Many of you are making the trip to College Station, Texas. Maybe afford a little time to swing by Lake Jackson, and you can see the beautiful showroom and all of the guitars that are available to you, all the stringed instruments. It's not just a guitar shop, though it is primarily a guitar shop, and it's run by guitar players. That matters. There's a lot of people in retail that are just kind of posers. These guys are players themselves. They know everything there is to know about playing guitar. about setting up a guitar and selling a guitar. A lot of people out there want your business, but I'll tell you what, I like to give business to Bulldogs whenever we can. This guitar shop is owned by Mississippi State folks. How about that? As you guys are well aware, I've got a Steve Vai signature model from them, and I absolutely love it. They brought it to me in ready-to-play shape, and I have played it several times. It is the cleanest sounding instrument I have ever had, and I think a lot of that is because they set it up. They know what they're doing. You need to get your new rig, and you need to get it professionally set up by the luthier there at Kalito Guitars. Now, all the accessories you would need, a gig bag, a case, cables, strings, anything guitar related, you can find there. Visit their website today. Visit the showroom. We'll give you a promo code to use whether you're doing it in person, over the phone, or online. That's BSR. You know it well. That gets you a 10% discount off your purchase. That gets you free shipping. That gets you no sales tax unless you live in the state of Texas. And they're going to make a 5% donation to the Bulldog Excellence Fund based on your purchase price. How could you go wrong? Premium instruments available at a discounted cost through a Bulldog business that is going to make a donation to the Mississippi State Athletics Department. What more incentive do you need to give your guitar and stringed instrument business to Kalito Guitars? Incredible service after the sale. And again, you can order online from anybody. And most people can handle that, right? But how many times do you get something and it's not exactly right? Well, that's why you can get somebody on the phone at Kalito Guitars. Rather than having to argue back and forth with a bot that just doesn't seem to understand what you're trying to get done, deal with real Bulldog people that are real guitar playing people at Kalito Guitars. Okay, kind of changing things up a little bit today. There's not a lot of rock musicians from College Station. There's not a lot of musicians, period, that are linked to Texas A&M. Robert L. Keene is one. That's not really my bag. I think I would probably do a disservice to that. Chris Tomlin, of course, the contemporary Christian artist, also an alum of Texas A&M. And they're a lot like us. But I thought to kind of change things up today. Let's do like Today in Music. Today in Music, October the 2nd. By the time you listen to this, it could be the 3rd. But because of it being the 2nd, there's some interesting things that happened. So we're going to start here with a song that I don't think you guys are very familiar with. Came out in 1995. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds were expected to be huge. They caused a little bit of a stir here. They had some success in Australia and, of course, the United Kingdom. They teamed up with Kylie Minogue. Everybody knows her. Incredibly good looking. But also, too, you know, did that cover of The Locomotion. And everybody loved it, thought it was great. Well, they had a duet here called Where the Wild Roses Grow, and it was an award-winning single, and it was dubbed Song of the Year by the ARIA Awards Group. I think you're going to have some fun with this song. And again, it's probably a song that you don't know that was highly acclaimed in other countries. So expanding your horizons a little bit. Again, that's Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds featuring Kylie Minogue, Where the Wild Roses Grow. That's number 10 on your list. Number 9, a little bit of trivia for you. Do you know what song had the shortest duration, but also was number one? So basically what we're saying here, like a lot of songs are 3 and 4 minutes long, what song was the shortest that actually reached the top of the charts? I'm going to give you a second to think about it. You're not going to get it. I'll just tell you. Your number 9 track is Maurice Williams and the Zodiacs. And you still don't know where we're going here. But it's the song Stay. You've heard it a million times. You know, oh, won't you stay just a little bit longer? It goes 1 minute and 37 seconds. And I think, you know, you probably could have put together another couple verses there and stretched this thing out. But it's kind of a unique bit of trivia there for all of you. You probably had no clue. Now you do. Number 8. Now, I don't know if you guys are well aware of Big Jim Sullivan. Now, many of you know Steve Lukather from Toto, and he has played on thousands of songs, hundreds of top 40 hits. Hundreds. Even though he was acclaimed as a guitarist, with Toto, and of course he came up with the primary riff of Beat It from Michael Jackson. Lukather is kind of known as the man. Well, before there was Steve Lukather in America, there was Big Jim Sullivan in England. And he was one of these guys that everybody wanted to play with. And his list of hits is extensive. Songs that he played on. Most of these, I guess, are predating many of our listeners, because this is more of a 50s, 60s type thing. But on this day, October the 2nd, the great Big Jim Sullivan passed away. Maybe that kind of flew under your radar. But Big Jim is a guy that did some major things with his life, and a very, very talented guy that did a lot of things that maybe kind of flew under your radar because of your age or the fact that it happened in a foreign land. But Big Jim did pass away October the 2nd, 2012. You know, he supposedly was the first European to ever own a Gibson Les Paul. Yeah, first one in Britain. He was the guitar teacher of Ritchie Blackmore, spent some time with Steve Howe of Asia, worked alongside 55 number one hits, worked with George Harrison, Frank Zappa, many, many others. And had a hit with a song that you know if you're a Gen Xer or older. He played the guitar. There used to be a band called The Seekers that he was a part of. They reunited and called themselves The New Seekers. And they kind of covered a song, but basically they took an older song, which was called True Love on Apple Pie, sung by Susan Shirley way back in 1971. And then Coca-Cola loved the song, and they had the New Seekers change the verbiage and the lyrics, and it became, I'd like to teach the world to sing. And of course, they removed the references to Coke in the radio release, but that's where that song came from. And you probably never knew that. Many of you probably haven't even thought about that, but everybody used to love that song. I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. I'd like to buy the world a Coke and keep it company. You know the song? You know you do. You're singing it right now in your head. But that's from The New Seekers. I'd like to teach the world to sing. 8 years ago, we said goodbye to the great Tom Petty. He was found non-responsive at his residence and died later that evening. Tom Petty, of course, died too soon. We'll throw out Free Falling today in his memory. Number six on your list. Now, many of you jumped aboard the Pearl Jam bandwagon after they changed the name from Mookie Blaylock, and right, you, how would you have known otherwise, unless you lived in Seattle? Of course, Pearl Jam rose from the ashes of Mother Love Bone, who were really some of the innovators of grunge music. Andy Wood, of course, had a band called Malfunction that was formed in 1980. I know that hurts feelings, but it's true. Andy, of course, born in Columbus, Mississippi. How about that? Yeah, the birthplace of grunge, right down the road in the Golden Triangle. Yeah. So Andy, of course, and his brother had the band Malfunction. In time, they became Mother Love Bone, and some of the songs that were recorded with Malfunction were re-recorded with Mother Love Bone on the album Apple. And, of course, Stone Gossard, of course, years later decided to dig up those Malfunction demos and have them remastered and released as an album. You can find it. Yeah, true. So back on point here. So 10 was your debut. You had your Pearl Jam debut. And then there was Versus. You guys are well aware of that. Animal and all that. That's the good stuff. And then there was Vitalogy. And then there became No Code. And that's when Pearl Jam had their big bout with Ticketmaster. And said, so we're not going to overcharge our fans. They've changed their policy since then. But on this day, in 1996... it was a fight and a riot at a 30,000-seat arena in Hartford, Connecticut. Several arrests. People got hurt. And it's not just other forms of music, right? I mean, you get a lot of people in a tight space. It gets hot. It gets crowded. People get a little irritated. So in honor of the Pearl Jam No Coda album, we're going to go with Hail Hail. Kind of fits a Mississippi State show. All right, number five. On this day in 1985, Police's fourth LP, The Ghost in the Machine, hit number one. And the big hit off that album was Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic. And the great rock band Ra covered that in recent years, and it's a very good rendition. But I don't know if much can compare to the stylings of Sting from 1985. 1983, your number four track. While she is kind of known as a one-hit wonder, and I don't know if that's fair, you know, but there's some people that never have the one big hit. You know, they just kind of have a career and life of mediocrity. And I don't know that people fully appreciate, you know, the full catalog here. But Bonnie Tyler changed so much. Jim Steinman, of course, that wrote alongside Meat Loaf from Bad Outta Hell and things like that. Steinman was an incredible songwriter. And he penned the tune Total Eclipse of the Heart. You know, and every time that I think about this song, I think about The Hangover. You know what I'm talking about? You know, they go to the wedding. Is it Hangover 1 or Hangover 2? I think it's Hangover 1. Yeah, the first Hangover. And, like, the band is playing Total Eclipse of the Heart. And it's such a bad rendition, but it's what I always hear. But Bonnie Tyler has had a tremendous amount of success. And that song is the defining moment of her career. But I think if you go back, if you like that dusky voice, you know, I think that if you enjoy that track, I think there are some more that you'll dig. You can find the Greatest Hits album out there, too. But, yeah, it was a silver album. How about that? All right, number three. And everybody knows this song, but I don't think most people realize who recorded it and kind of the history behind it. And, you know, I'm not a country guy. And this is not a typical country song. But on October 2nd of last year, the single A Bar Song, Tipsy, by Shaboozy, was number one. In time, it had a 19-week run on the Billboard Hot 100. It also went to number one on the country charts, making Shaboozy the first African-American male artist to be number one on the country music charts. How about that? That's super cool, right? And it actually exceeded, with a lot of space, the previous longest-running number one, Carrie Underwood's Jesus Take the Wheel. So Shaboozy's A Bar Song, Tipsy, your number three track. And everybody's heard it. Everybody's heard it. Number two, and these are classic songs, these last couple. I don't know if you guys remember, if it's going to make you feel old. You know, it's going to make you feel old, and that's okay. It's better than the alternative, I guess. I mean, I you know, I still feel relatively young. I do. Maybe you guys don't, but I do, you know. 1982, this song reached number one for the first time. Stayed there for 4 weeks. It also went number one in the UK. It's John Cougar's Jack and Diane. And again, we are, listen, at no point in our lives have we ever sucked on a chili dog. I don't know what that's about. It's just kind of manipulating lyrics to make them work. But Jack and Diane, what a timeless classic. You know, you may not agree with John Cougar or, quote, now John Cougar Mellencamp's politics, and that's completely your business. But everybody loves Jack and Diane. They have. And it's a song from our youth. And, of course, it's a song about growing up. Number one, though, way back to 1971. On this day in 1971, Sir Rod Stewart went number one with Maggie May. And again, it's one of the, like, Rod Stewart is one of the coolest people that has ever lived. You know what I'm saying? It's just, I know some friends of ours got to go see him on the farewell tour, play down in Brandon. And how special is that, that we have Rod make a stop in Mississippi on his farewell tour. But, yeah, Rod Stewart, I had that album Camouflage, which was phenomenal. I got a handful of Rod Stewart albums over there on vinyl. But I can just tell you, man, When I think about true rock stars, I talk about people that their persona, their charisma, their charm just far exceeds that of the typical performer. Rod Stewart is near the top of that list. I mean, it's like Prince, Rod Stewart, Yeah, there's a handful of people like that. There are just some people you look at, it's like everything they do has a measure of greatness to it. Like, even if you just put on any Rod Stewart album, there's going to be some B-sides that you're unfamiliar with that you're going to love. Because this guy was not just a pop star. This guy was a true musician in every sense of the word. So that's your top 10 list today. Hope you enjoyed that. A lot of cool things on there. Very diverse and eclectic. You start with Nick Cave and you end with Rod Stewart. You've covered a lot of ground. So that's your day in rock history. And again, the Shaboozy trivia, I think, is interesting, as well as the Maurice Williams and the Zodiac. Some things you probably didn't know. That's what we're here to do, to educate, entertain, and inform. You can send your request to Roy Samanti, my friend, at Dogmatic67. And you can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle, Dogmatic67. Of course, I'm on all forms of social media, at ScoutSteveR. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, we love Campus Bookmart. And why? Because they have what we want. We can never get enough Mississippi State merch. No matter how much we have, we want more. It's true. Starting to cool off a little bit. Time to start thinking about those hoodies, those quarter zips, just kind of some heavier clothing. I like the cold weather. I mean, I like the cool weather a lot, but I like the cold weather. I like being able to kind of dress up. I think my cooler clothes are when the weather's cooler too. So you need to get yourself some cool clothes from Campus Bookmart. In addition to their great selections of apparel, you can get hats, decorative items, gift ideas, everything you need to detail out your fan cave you can find at Campus Bookmart. Next time you're in town, stop by and see their smiling faces. In the event you can't make it to town, or perhaps game day is a difficult shopping day for you, visit them at campusbookmart.net, courtesy of Al Gore's Internet, and use promo code BSR. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. Let me also remind you, Mom, as you are the primary gift buyer in the family, while you were sleeping, the calendar turned over to October, okay? So next month is November, which is the end of the regular season and Thanksgiving and all that good stuff. And then it's Christmas time. Don't wait to Black Friday to start your shopping, right? You want this to be a great Christmas. Go ahead and plan ahead. Start getting some things now, putting some things back. Don't wait until the end. Don't stress yourself out. Be that very organized mom. Yeah, make it a point and go ahead and get some things. Maybe not everything, because I know how much fun it is to go out with your friends and things like that and go get coffee and go to Target. And all. I get it. Nothing's like that pumpkin spice latte in the minds of many of you. But go ahead and get ahead of the game. Go ahead and get ahead of the game and get a few things to just kind of ease your own anxiety, right? Super cool, right? Campus Bookmart can help you with that. All right, keys to victory. Now, I have watched two games. I didn't watch all four of them because I didn't think I'd learn a lot from watching them play UTSA and Utah State. But I did watch the Notre Dame game, and I did watch the Auburn game. As a matter of fact, I've watched the Auburn game twice. Not a lot happened in that game. I want to go back and look at a couple things with you guys. And you hear me typing here. I'm having to pull some things up here to kind of take a look. But there's just a lot to this team that I think there's still some mystery about. And we went through some of the, our preview on Wednesday, kind of setting this thing out, you know, taking a look back, what you can expect, you know, who do you need to watch for, all that good stuff. So going back to this Notre Dame game, you know, Notre Dame got out first in this ball game. It's 14-7, and then at the break, the Aggies held the lead 28-24. One of the things that I have noticed about the Aggies, with the exception of the Auburn game, is they have a tendency to kind of get things going prior to the half, okay? Offensively, they come out and they kind of like spar with you a little bit and see how you're going to defend them. They may take a shot, kind of see what you're going to do with your blitz packages and things like that. And so I give them some credit in that respect. They do a lot of scripting, and then based on what you do, they kind of tailor their offensive attack. And so that's one of the things with this one. I don't think it's going to be just enough to survive the first quarter. We've talked about that in some other games. You know, being able to get through the first quarter is big. I think, really, we got to get into the half. We got to get into the half to feel good about where we stand. I think that's a fair estimation. And I'm going to underscore that point here shortly. But, you know, the Auburn game, I think, is an outlier in many ways. But let me just kind of run this down for you. I mean, just so you kind of understand exactly what I'm trying to illustrate here to you in kind of a roundabout way. But starting back in week one, quarter two has pretty much been the decisive quarter for this A&M team. Now, we'll go back, if I can get this website to work. Here we go. Taking a little while on the Auburn side. But against the Roadrunners, they're up 7-3. And then in the second quarter, they begin to get a little separation. They outscored Texas San Antonio 14-7 in the second quarter and then just kind of nursed that along the rest of the way. But that was their, you know, it wasn't a lot of separation, but they put the game up two scores in that second quarter. You go back here and you look at the game against Utah State. I'm skipping ahead one. Is that right? No, Utah State. Similar situation. We get through the first quarter. The Aggies are up 10-6. And then, boom, now that they see how you're attacking them, it's a 20-point second quarter for Texas A&M. So it goes from a 10-6 game to a 30-6 game at the break, and then in the second half, they just kind of nurse it along. They'll trade scores with you, put the game away. It's just kind of an interesting anomaly how this thing goes. Same thing in a Notre Dame game. Except this time Notre Dame gets out first. It's 14-7 Irish after one, and then boom, second quarter. A&M puts up 21. It's 21-10 in that quarter, which makes it 28-24. And then the second half, what do? They just kind of nurse this thing along, and of course they make a big play late to win it 41-40. But again, the decisive quarter, the second quarter. You look at the Auburn game, and there wasn't a lot of scoring in this game. It's 7-0 after one, and then Auburn gets a field goal, and then A&M has a couple of drives where they kind of get in their own way and give Auburn a little credit too. But they had two scoring drives during the second quarter to make it 13-3. So they stretched it out to a two-score game. But, guys, this could have easily been a 20-point quarter. At the very least, a 14-point quarter. And so, again, give Auburn some credit, you know, for bending and not breaking and forcing those field goal opportunities. But I think it's important because you may feel like you're in the game, and they're about to kind of flip the script in the game a little bit. So I think what we have to do, and again, second half scoring has not been necessarily a strong suit for A&M. But in half adjustments in that first half have been very, very good. And you've heard me say on the show before, if we can survive that first punch, we'll be okay. I think in this one, we got to get to the half within a score or with the lead to win this football game. It's going to be easier said than done. I think we could all agree with that. I mean, we're going to play exceptionally well. I mean, A&M, while they may be a tad overrated at six, they're a good team. They are a good team. And again, offensively, they were very, very good the first 3 weeks. I mean, averaging, 42 points a game. And one of those, of course, was in Notre Dame. And give them a lot of credit for going up there, playing in a hostile environment against a top 10 team and then coming out of there with a win. I think a lot of people I'm UTSA and Utah State. I mean, come on. You double those teams up, you should. So you're averaging 43 after week two, and then you could put up 41 on the Irish? Yeah, I think that is an attention getter for sure. Now, when we kind of break this stuff down, like when I go back and look at the Notre Dame game, there's a lot of things that jump out to me. And I think the number one thing is Marcel Reed's ability to extend plays. There's a lot of plays that he makes that he's not necessarily credited for. You know what I mean? Because he puts linebackers in conflict. And when there's the threat to run, all of a sudden you have to respect that because he is such an elite athlete. And he did not have necessarily a great day passing against Notre Dame. You look up and you're like, Stevie threw for 360 yards. That's true. 17 of 37. He had more than half of his passes go incomplete, and he threw a pick in the game. But he hit on some big throws. And that's where I think we talk about those linebackers being in conflict. And you can slide those crossers behind the backers. They have to respect the run. You saw that in the Notre Dame game. You saw Marcel Reed kind of be able to create. He ran the football seven times in that game. One of them for 14 yards. But it's just enough to make you hesitate a little bit. Le'Veon Moss had 81 yards in that game, but three touchdowns. They did a really good job converting in the red zone. But, you know, statistically, you look at this game and you're like, man, you'd expect just absolutely ridiculous numbers. Well, one guy did, Mario Craver, 7 of 207 with a long of 86. And that's the thing with Mario. Our safeties are going to have to keep him in front of them. You can't let him go out there and just attack the game. He said yesterday he's looking forward to playing us, good, ready to see his teammates. And it's probably smart of A&M to kind of get out in front of that and not make him available to the full media, though. They had their on-campus reporter interview him for about 5 minutes. So you can kind of control the narrative, right? Because you never know what the media is going to ask. But that A&M game, that win against Notre Dame, is impressive because, again, you look at this and you're like, you expect these gaudy offensive numbers. And total offense, yeah, they put up some big numbers. But it wasn't exactly, you know, precise offensive execution. You look at the Notre Dame side of things, you know, they threw for almost 300 yards, too. They went 20 of 32. They had two running backs kind of go off. One had 94. Jadarian Prince had 68. Of course, he had just demolished Arkansas last week. But this is just one of those games. It's like you're just kind of treading along, and next thing you know, somebody hits a big play. First downs in the game, almost identical, 23 to 24. Three of Texas A&M's came by way of penalty. You look at rushing numbers, 136 to 128. Passing, 293 to 360, and really that's the difference, right? You know, almost 70 yards difference in favor of A&M, and they only won it by one. But total offense, the Aggies put up 488 on a team that was a national championship finalist last year. And Notre Dame put up 429 against them. You know, punting was okay. Notre Dame was averaging 46. A&M just 30.2. You kidding me? And that wasn't like they were just hemmed up there close and had to put it inside the 20. They didn't have a single punt inside the 20. And only one was fair caught. Average yards on kickoff in that game? All of them were touchbacks. Six of the eight were touchbacks. But 61.6 for A&M. And so you work through this stuff, and players have to make plays. And that's kind of what happened in this game. Again, the numbers are kind of indicative of a very, very tight ball game. But it's A&M finding a way in hostile territory to win a defining game in many respects. Randy Bond kicks a field goal to give them the win with 13 seconds left. So right now, yeah, what'd they do here? Yeah, it's a touchdown pass. Randy Bond kicked the extra point. My mistake. But that's the difference in the ballgame. You know. Jeremiah Love goes in with 3 minutes to go, and then the extra point's no good. And so that ends up being the difference, was, you know, a botched extra point. But there are some plays to be made against this A&M defense. And again, you go back and you look, and if you just look at the Auburn game, that's just kind of a snapshot of what they can do. And again, I think a big part of that is the fact that this Auburn offense has not found a sense of itself. And they have a tremendous amount of offensive skill, but they have a quarterback problem. They absolutely do. And, you know, kind of looking back at like team numbers here, like in these earlier ball games, Texas San Antonio outrushed A&M by nearly double. Did you know that? I bet you didn't. And they were very, you know, proficient in the passing game, or at least efficient, maybe not proficient. But they were 21 to 34. Put up 373 yards of offense. A&M has had 399. But A&M, you know, did what good teams do, right? They force you to kick field goals, and that's why we've got to put balls in the end zone. We can't just be – we got to get something, but we can't just be satisfied kicking a field goal. And you look at those numbers, they're so comparable. A&M won the game 42-24. You expect it to be a close game. It wasn't. And those are the things that just kind of jump out to me. It's like, hey, they'll let you move it between the 20s, and then all of a sudden, they lock down on you. Now, Utah State didn't do much offensively against them. They did not. 250 yards, more than Auburn got. But the Aggies put up 554. So, you know, that score and the stats are somewhat comparable. And then you go back and look at this Auburn game. And again, I think that's more of the anomaly. And they've had two games, you know, Texas San Antonio and Notre Dame moved the football against them. Auburn and Utah State did not. You expect Utah State not. But you look, again, you look at this Auburn and you look at where they rank, you know, offensively with these numbers. And listen, had Auburn not had a big interception that got them inside the five, they don't score, at least not a touchdown. It was a 13-3 game. And they get the long pick, and then a 2-yard run from Arnold Jackson makes it 13-10. And all of a sudden, the Aggieland crowd was very, very unsettled. It's like, oh, we're good. We're about to put this game away. We'll kick a field goal. You know, makes it 16-3. The game's over, right? Wrong. And that was the play that allowed Auburn to kind of get up off the mat, and then Jackson Arnold just couldn't get it done. And it's not just him. Don't get me wrong. But when you go back and look at these numbers, it's ridiculous. Like, again, give A&M a lot of credit. But some of this is on the responsibility of Hugh Freeze. They, guys, they had 9 first downs in the game. 9. When is the last time that you've seen an SEC team have 9 first downs in a game? You'd have to go do some research. 2 of those were by way of penalty. So they earned 7 first downs in a game. A&M had 21. Auburn ran for 52 yards on 24 attempts, and a lot of those attempts were Jackson Arnold. We're going to get a little bit more. 18 of 33 passing. And listen, some of these numbers on the passing numbers are because of the fact that A&M is really good in the secondary, especially at corner. But here's something kind of, again, kind of inside the numbers. Jackson Arnold had 15 attempts in this game. Eric Singleton, a wide receiver, a very talented wide receiver, had an end around. So you had 8 carries for Auburn running backs. That's it, 8. What kind of game plan is that? Especially when you go back and you look at Texas San Antonio ran the football against them and doubled them up. So what's happened here? Jackson Arnold had 11 yards on 15 carries. When you get 7 sacks, it kind of impacts your ability to run football, at least your statistics. But I think in many respects, what you saw last weekend in College Station, yes, give A&M some credit. But I think also, too, I think it's pretty safe to say that whatever Auburn's game plan was, they didn't follow it. Because how in the world do you just have 8 carries for running backs at Auburn? You know, a team that has historically had one of the better running attacks in this league and in the country. And you only let them touch it 8 times. And you know what's crazy about it? Jeremiah Cobb had 6 carries for 28 yards. That works out to 4.7 yards a carry. Damari Austin had 2 carries for 10. You can do the math. That's 5. So of the 8 carries you had for running backs, you averaged about 5 yards a carry. Why wouldn't you let them carry it more? Now, some of it, of course, is because you got beat on first down. And you're in second long, you know. And a lot of this, again, it just kind of boggles the mind a little bit. Number one, Jackson Arnold obviously lost a job at Oklahoma. We begin to wonder if he wasn't going to be our guy. We were excited about that. And I think now maybe that's the best thing to happen to us. And you know, Auburn's got a lot of money tied up in him. But it's an interesting dynamic. And so, again, I think there are still a lot of questions about this A&M team. A bunch. But I think that there is an opportunity to run the football against them. That's the thing that I tell myself. If Texas San Antonio can run the football against Texas A&M, why can't we? We ran the football extensively against Tennessee last week. Maybe you guys have forgotten. You know, we have run the football in the Jeff Levy era for the most part pretty well. We had a couple games we didn't. Didn't run it well against Ole Miss at all last year. Give them a lot of credit. But that front, we knew that front from Tennessee was going to be really good. And again, we found some success. Now, how much success happens this week without Albert Reese? And again, I don't expect him to play. I'm told that we would know today for sure on Isaac Smith. But Brennan Thompson, yeah, we expect him to play. We do. But I'm just looking back here at some team numbers. You know, for Tennessee, if I can find – sometimes this stuff is so easy to find that other times it's like I just feel like they're hiding it from us. But look at Tennessee numbers here, kind of game by game. If I can find it. Goodness. Team – yeah, here we go. Comparison. All right. So Syracuse ran for 103 yards. Against Tennessee in a law in a game they got beat 45-26. There was some separation in the game. East Tennessee State ran for 49 yards. Georgia ran the football 55 times for 198 yards. UAB ran it 19 for 23. And then your Bulldogs ran it 57 times for 203. So State ran the football against a defense that has been really good against the run, saved that Georgia game, and State exceeded that. And those are the things that I think about. If Georgia ran the football on Tennessee and nobody else did other than us, and listen, Syracuse and East Tennessee State and UAB are not on the caliber of Mississippi State, Georgia, and Tennessee. But I think what you can look at here is that this Mississippi State running game is maybe better than people realize, and I think a lot of that is because of the depth. We knew this running back room was going to be good, and you got to give the you know, the Bulldogs a lot of credit, you know, for going out and getting Fluff Bothwell and getting some guys along the front wall there and getting Davin Booth back. And of course, you know, Booth was one holding call away from going over 100 yards last week too. You know, looking at the Bulldogs running numbers this year, we're going to do comparison here, okay? State has run for at least 188 yards in every game but one. And that was against Arizona State. We ran for 66 yards in that game. Against Southern Miss, we go for a buck 88. Against Alcorn, we go for 282. Northern Illinois, we go 292 and then 203 against Tennessee. So you can kind of begin to do the math there and figure out Mississippi State's been able to run the football against just about anybody. Now, of course, we knew that there were some plays he made against that Arizona State secondary. There's some truth in that, too. But I think it's an interesting dynamic that we're getting around 200 yards a game with one exception. And I think that's an important aspect, too. I think when you begin to consider the fact that Mississippi State as a team has gotten significantly better in running the football. And that was one of the things last year, around the middle of the year, really, I guess, that Florida game, we kind of got the running game going. We ran against Texas. We ran some against Georgia. But, you know, when you begin to break down, you know, what does this State running attack look like in comparison to the rest of the SEC? Rushing offense, State's sixth. Missouri is first. Yeah, Missouri's first. They're averaging 292 a game. Yeah, that'll come down in SEC play. Vanderbilt averaging 223. Arkansas 213, and they're a run first offense. Georgia 213, Ole Miss 208, and their state right at 205. And so one of the better rushing attacks in this conference, doing better than Texas, doing better than Tennessee, doing better than A&M, doing better than Kentucky, Auburn. You can just kind of run the numbers here. Significantly better than LSU and South Carolina. And so this is kind of that, you know, unstoppable force against an impenetrative object, or whatever we call that analogy, that euphemism, you know. I think we're going to be able to run the football. And we're going to have to run the football to keep those linebackers honest and to protect Blake. You've got to keep people off Blake. And I think that we've maybe learned some things last week. That's the whole point. Apart from getting better week to week, is you learn which deficiencies your opponents exploit, because once it's on film, other people are going to kind of mimic what they did. So you could rest assured, they lined up in some 7-tech last week and tried to whip us off the edge, and they did. Other times we handled it, sometimes we didn't. So you better be aware this week. Does that mean you change your splits a little bit? Do you put a tight end over left tackle to give Jimothy Lewis a little bit of help? Do you put Max Reese out there? I mean, sometimes just having an extra body and just kind of changing their alignment a little bit gives you that half a second you need. And so I think we'll maybe put a back to that side, maybe put a tight end to that side. Maybe you move some things around, you do some things schematically or formationally just to kind of confuse them. I don't think there's going to be a lot of vertical passing in this game because of the quality of the A&M corners. Now, we've got Brennan Thompson, and of course, if you establish the run, they have to respect it and put a safety in the box, sometimes two, and then maybe against a, you know, one high safety, maybe you can make some plays with Evans and Brennan Thompson. You line them up on the same side, you know, give them that switch release, give them the opportunity to go create in the open field, get some option routes and things of that nature. But I don't think you're going to see a ton of vertical passing, just because, you know, especially Tyreek Chappelle, that kid is really, really good. Really good. And had he been healthy last year, he probably gets drafted. You know, that's how good he is. The guy's got All-American potential. And they beat him one time last week, and he nearly picked it off. An unbelievable one-handed catch from Singleton, who just kind of pinned it against his shoulder pads, and then they kind of wrestled to the ground and they gave the ball to Auburn. They should have. But I think that's the thing with us. We've got to get them in the intermediate passing game. We've got to run the football, use the intermediate passing game, and that will kind of loosen some things up. But defensively, the main thing for us is slow down the run and be able to kind of keep the pocket with some integrity. You want to keep reading the pocket. At times, accuracy has hurt him, especially on the deeper balls, but he's got elite speed outside. So, you know, you got some guys that can track the football, Mario Craver and Casey Concepcion, and so they can go make plays down the field. We've got to keep top on the coverage and then make Marcel Reed, you know, kind of work it down the field. You can't give up chunk plays. You got, because the more times he has to throw it, the better chance he is he's going to throw it to you. Those are my keys to victory. And I hope that you enjoyed that. But again, the second quarter, that's one of those things you got to really watch. But that's what good coaches do. They come out and they probe, and then they see what you're doing. They adjust their play calling based on how you've reacted to their script. And they've been very, very good at it this year. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none. If you're looking to bring a large group to town, and you should, you owe it to yourself to kind of make these magical weekends or maybe some midweek events special. Nothing better than being around the people you love the most. Stark Vegas Clubhouse has plenty of room for you and your guests, plenty of parking, 6 bedrooms, 2 baths, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, which is fabulous, the fire pit area. As I mentioned, plenty of parking, because that's the challenge, right? When you're trying to get a lot of people together, like, where's everybody going to park? No worries at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. It's the old renovated country club out past the Highlands, just off 182, 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. You can do your tailgating right there. How convenient is that, right? plenty of people can come over. Like, you just get it for a ball game weekend, and then like have your guest come and hang with you, but you could have more friends come by and eat with you. There's just so much you can do, so many possibilities. Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page auto-populates. You have the opportunity to kind of peruse all the amenities available to you and your guest. And there's some booking options that pop up too. You can book through Airbnb or VRBO. It's up to you. Or you can save some money. Book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That's Beautiful Steve Robertson, the number 10, BSR10. Gets you 10% off your stay. Yeah. You can pay more, but why? The best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Okay, we've had some updates to the availability report. You know, it's not an injury report. It is an availability report. Now, when it came out last night, Wednesday, the initial report, there were, I guess, six names on the list. Yeah, there were six names on the list. Two have been removed. All right, so let me update you on this. Okay, so Will Whitson and Blake Steen, out for the year. No surprise there. They're listed. Not going to be any change all year long. Darian Gallant was listed as doubtful. He is no longer listed. So that means that he is now available. Brennan Smith was listed as probable. I guess I got that wrong. Probable was Gallant and Brennan Thompson. They were both probable. Now neither are listed, which means they're available. Albert Reese and Isaac Smith were listed as questionable. Now, Isaac Smith remains questionable. I'm told it'll be a game-time decision depending on how he feels. Albert Reese now listed as doubtful. We've been reporting over at jeanspage.com since Sunday that we did not expect him to play this week. Of course, if, you know, if it was an Egg Bowl or, you know, final game of the year and bowl eligibility is on the line, I have no doubt that Albert would try to gut it out. But, yeah, he's banged up. And he'll take this week off and then the open date, and we expect him to be back for Florida. Okay? So, as of now, only two players that were on the field last week may not be on the field this week. We'll see what happens with Isaac. Of course, both of them are very significant players to us. We're not going to sit here and act like they're not, but it's true. A&M has three players that are questionable, Scooby Williams being one, but he's been out for some time. Safety Bryce Anderson and Blake Ivey, an offensive lineman, is a relatively new addition to the availability report. But that's how things stand right now. I do think we'll cover this game. I think we can win this game, but I think we're going to need some help from them in order to do that. Probably need to win the turnover battle. I like where we sit in the punting battle. I think we've kind of got that settled. We had a great week last week from Ethan Pulliam. Of course, we hope he doesn't have to play. You know, we hope we don't have to punt at all. But when we do, I believe we have a real weapon there. So I think we can win the battlefield position. We've got to be able to sustain, you know, the road noise. And the thing that I would share with you guys, too, I know a lot of people talk about how loud it is. I've shot photos from field level on multiple occasions at Kyle Field. I've also been in a press box multiple occasions at Kyle Field. Because of the way that stadium is constructed, because it's basically just elevated, it is a huge, huge, huge structure. And it's open air, right? And so a lot of that noise kind of gets out of there. I'm not going to sit here and discount the impact of 100,000 fans. It does get noisy in there, but it's not Tiger Stadium. It's not. And again, because of the way it's constructed, like the noise from the upper decks, you don't even really feel it. You don't hear it. And so it's, you know, people say, what's the difference between, you know, 60,000 cowbells and 100,000 Aggies? And of course, they're going to say what's louder there. But I can tell you, as a guy that has been field level at every place in this conference, it's not as loud as you might think. Now, you got to work on your communication, for sure. And I think right now, speaking of that, I've heard that Blake Steen is going to get that extra year. I think it's just a foregone conclusion. Albert Reese, of course, has missed a couple of games now. And just like on this show, I told you guys here a couple weeks ago, I didn't expect Timothy Lewis to play. And then, of course, people run out you know, the fake experts come out and say, oh, no, 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 he's fine. Yeah, guess what? He didn't play. He didn't play against Arizona State. Javon James stepped up, and I think that was a good thing for us long term. And Jimothy, a guy that, you know, struggled a little bit last week, but he is probably your most athletic offensive lineman. I think what you're going to see is Jacoby Jackson take most of the snaps at left guard. And then Luke Work, I think, will get some reps out at right tackle. So that's one something to watch. You know, because we found some great success running off right tackle last week against Tennessee, but you're not going to have Albert Reese to depend on. So Luke Work's going to be a guy that we're expecting to kind of step up for us. Of course, you'll have to handle a lot of that front side pressure. You know, so this is not going to be a walk in the park by any stretch of the imagination. Again, I do think this A&M team may be a tad overrated, but we have got to do a good job, and I think Zachary Tillman is probably the guy. When we talk about spying the quarterback, in those spy situations, I think Zachary is probably the way to go. Very gifted athlete, very fleet of foot, good tackler in space. We'll see how that progresses. But, yeah, I'm ready to go. I really am. We're eager to go. We'll get into bed tonight. We'll have plenty of content for you up tomorrow. We've already pre-written some things over at jeanspage.com to kind of cover us while we travel. You know, Jacob Bain and I'll be making the trip, and you know, Mike Nemeth, Dave Murray, and everybody kind of keep holding the fort down for us here back in Stark Vegas. But yeah, I mean, I love what we do, and it's been fun for me too because all this is so brand new for Jacob. You know, Jacob's a young guy, obviously, and Jacob was working for, I guess you'd call him a competitor, but he was working for the SI side, and they live off, you know, clicks and views. They don't really have subscriptions, but you know, it was basically an aggregate news site. And there's a lot of other people out there that are an aggregate news site too, plenty of them. There are a lot of people, even on our network, that, you know, a guy tweets out that they have an offer. They go write an article, but, you know, they don't call the kid. You know, without some intel from the kid, you don't really, I mean, what do you have, you know? You know, what are you adding to the reader? What are you providing them? We want to get reaction. What's a kid think about the offer? You know, that's always our goal. We don't just go write an article about a tweet. You know, sometimes kids commit, and we'll write it short until we can get them on the phone. But my point being is that all of this is new for Jacob. Like, he has never been to College Station, Texas. I have been several times in multiple sports, and I can tell you, I do enjoy going out there. It is a long drive. We'll kind of break it up a little bit, obviously. On Friday, because we're going to go cover a high school football game with Camden Capehart. We'll go cover that. We'll spend the night. We'll have a short drive, you know, because like, there's no point staying in College Station because game's not till 6:30. You got to check out by 11, you know. And so we're going to try to kill some of the drive on the way back after the game is over on Saturday. But yeah, it's been good for me. I mean, I'm an old news hound, right? And so to see the excitement, he's like, I was telling him, I said, hey, let's go cover this and go see Camden Capehart, our commitment. We'll get some pictures and video of him that and nobody else has, you know. And he's like, oh, he's so jacked. He's like, oh, we get to go cover a high school football game in Texas. Can't wait to see the stadium, you know. And sometimes it's old hat for me. I'll be honest with you. I mean, you've covered a bunch of high school games in a lot of different states. Sometimes you forget how important that is. And the thing that stands out to me is how special it is for the kids, you know, because, hey, somebody made the effort to come watch them play, watch their teammates play, get some video, get some cool pictures. You know, we got great equipment, you know, and it's like, sometimes you forget about what it means to them. And so Jacob kind of has reminded me of that. You know, he said, I can't wait to get to Kyle Field. And I've prepared him, and some of you guys wouldn't know this unless you've been, but the press box at Kyle Field does shake. Like in the beginning when A&M does their little swaying back and forth and they all lock arms and stuff, and they do a lot of cool stuff up there. Some of it's kind of weird, but some of it's cool. But the press box shakes. They even have a notice in front of your seat that tells you, hey, you're not experiencing an earthquake, which is kind of cool too, right? That's kind of a cool thing. But yeah, it's new to him. Of course, we're going to the swamp soon too. That'll all be new for him. And I encourage you to get out and go pack the car and bring your kids to go make some new experiences and some new memories. We didn't get to go to a lot of games when I was a kid. We listened to most of them on the radio. And when we got a chance to go, it was a big deal. Especially, you know, most times it was in Jackson. We didn't get to go to Starkville very often. But the reality of it is that as we open the show, man, life is short, death is certain. You get out and go make some memories, not just for yourself, but for them. You know, and I had a friend of mine in the media that told me, he goes, man, with all this traveling you do, you need to take more pictures. And I'm like, what? Take pictures? And he goes, yeah. He goes, you need to take pictures of yourself, even if you don't post them on social media. You take them, put them in a folder on your phone or whatever. It's going to mean a lot to your family one day. I never considered that. How cool it is. So like when the bride travels with me, we take pictures together, you know. And, you know, going to Kyle Field or, you know, going to Bomb Stadium and stuff. And so those things, you know, it's so easy and convenient these days. You remember, I'm around the 1900s, you know. So the infancy of the internet came towards the end of the 1900s. And then it became so incredibly difficult. You had a digital camera, and that was such a big thing. We had a digital camera, and then you'd have to go plug it in, edit your photos, and you could post them. Nowadays, it's just so simple. You know, you just make a couple of clicks, and you can take a picture of yourself doing something cool, and then post it on social media or share it with your friends. You need to do that too. Again, life is short, death is certain, and someday your family's going to sit around and they're going to go through all those pictures. Probably just pass the phone around or whatever. They can plug it into the to the television, and they're going to see all these great pictures of all the great places you've been, all the cool things you did, some of the fun people you met. All that is so incredibly important. And I think one of the things that is most important about life, in addition to making memories and that sort of stuff, is to kind of focus on what matters most. Focus on what matters most. It is so incredibly easy to get so caught up and so many things that don't affect us. I heard a guy say at an AA meeting once, and I won't say his name, I'm not breaking anybody's anonymity, but it always stuck with me. And he's like, man, 99% of the stuff that I get mad about, it's not even my business. And that was before the introduction of social media, right? I mean, just think about that. You know, nowadays, everybody else's business is just kind of right in your face. And there's all this instant media, this, you know, it's 24/7 news cycle, and there's always something else to get upset about. There's a new post or a new reel or something. And in some respects, I think we're being brainwashed. I really believe that. I think we are being brainwashed. And the way these algorithms work, right, it's like you watch one video, well, then it sends you another one on a similar topic. And so it's like it's feeding you your interest. And I think that's a crazy thing. You know, let me just see the next video and consequence. But it's like they want to lock me in, right? And they're like, oh, well, if he watched this 90-second video, then if we send him another time stealer, he'll watch the next 90-second video of a similar variety. And so sometimes you got to put the phone down, right, and focus on what matters most. And that's what is happening in our own lives, in our own communities. And you know, I could speak about this for a long time because I fall victim to it sometimes too. But the thing that I know at the end of the day is I got this hot blonde coming that was born and raised in Adams County, Mississippi, that's coming home to this house that we bought in Oktibbeha County so we could be close to Mississippi State. And I know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that she's going to be happy to be here because I'm here. Not just because our stuff is here, but this is what we call home. This is where we've raised our children. This is where we've made memories. And the thing that I've learned about that is if you want to change the world, you're not going to do it on Facebook. You're not, no matter what they tell you. The way you change the world is you start in your household. You start at the dinner table. You start involving your kids in things that really matter. You know, teaching them about teamwork, teaching them about sports, teaching them about, you know, speech and debate, teaching them about youth group, teaching them about all the other things in life that matter, that are bigger than themselves and what their role in the world could be. And you socialize them. And that's what happens, because then all of a sudden, you know, your goodness and your good qualities are kind of magnified through your children. And then you branch out in your community, get involved with your school, you know, you get involved with your children's activities. Don't live through them. And there are a lot of people that do that. I was guilty of that at one point too. You know, when Ani first became, we didn't know if we were going to have any other kids besides Ani, right? And so I probably spoiled him. My wife would say that I did. I did. And, you know, we lost our first one. We had Ani, lost our third one. And I thought, you know what, God, if this is all you're going to bless us with, man, if this is it, I am so incredibly grateful because there's so many people that never have a child of their own. And so I'm not going to be ungrateful, right? I'm not. And we end up having three more, obviously. But you know, as soon as he could start walking, I had him kicking a soccer ball, and I couldn't wait to get him on the pitch and, you know, let him do some good things, let him find out who he was. And then, you know, in some respects, you know, nobody, they write a bunch of books, but you don't know who to trust, right? You kind of like to figure this thing out for your own. I raised a great son. I raised two, right? But my oldest son is he's married, plays the guitar in praise team rather than in a bar. He's got three kids. You know, works at the corporate office at Walmart. You know, I mean, it's like there's just a lot of things about him. I look back in hindsight and say, you know what, Mama, we got a few things right. We did. And made a lot of mistakes along the way. But I'm grateful that I didn't mess up any of my kids. You know, that's one of those things, you know. Dan and I used to be terrified about, you know, addiction and recovery and things like that. And it's like, oh my gosh, I don't want the karma. Right? I don't want to reap what I sowed with my own parents. I don't want to get paid back for all that stuff, as people said. You know, but we didn't. You know, we didn't. And I think a lot of that, too, is just being transparent with my kids. I never tried to be Superman. You know, I never, ever, ever tried to be more than who I was. And I think in their eyes at times I was, because, you know, Dad's the guy to fix this stuff. Dad's the guy, when things are wrong, finds a solution. And sometimes it's right, sometimes it's wrong. But the one thing that I know for sure, and I remember Mia, and it's so crazy to think about this in hindsight. It so absolutely blows my mind. She was at a magnet school program in Baton Rouge. And, of course, I've kind of talked about that stuff before. Like, they took the high-achieving kids and put them in underperforming schools and kind of isolated him from the rest of the student body to prop up their test scores, which is the absolute wrong way to do it. Right? You're just propping up these failing schools. It's stupid. You're just moving kids around to try to manipulate average test scores. So you can say this school's doing better. No, that school's not doing better. It's you just took high-performing students and placed them in there to bring up the curve. And there was a student teacher that called my child stupid. And I still get angry about that. But I just think now what a complete fraud they are. And but anyway, she comes home, tells me about it. And Mia's never been the real emotional one, right? She just has always been a matter of fact. And she just doesn't get emotional about stuff. And I think in some ways she gets that from her mom, because her dad does get emotional at times. But as you guys have heard on the show. But I told her, I said, I will be there with you first. I'm bringing you to school tomorrow. I will be there first thing in the morning. And we go in there and we speak with the assistant principal, and they absolutely could not have handled it better. Absolutely could not have handled it better. And I remember that very robust assistant principal. He looked at my child and he said, "Sweetheart, you are brilliant." He goes, "You are a brilliant child and you don't listen to any of that." And then they made the student teacher apologize. And that's really all I wanted, right? I wanted, number one, my child to know that I had her back, and number two, that we're not going to listen to any of that stuff. We're not going to listen to other people's criticisms of us and then take that to heart. We're not going to question ourselves or our abilities based on the opinion of somebody else. It really doesn't matter. It doesn't have a lot of experience in this, you know? And I think everybody learned a lesson, including me. Right? Number one, that the administration of that school had my child's best interest at heart. And I think Mia understood too, when somebody does something stupid, Daddy's going to get involved. And Daddy will make a scene if necessary. And I think that student teacher learned a lot too. I never even spoke to the guy. I didn't make a big deal about it. I wasn't going to go up there and threaten people. Of course, the old South Mississippi gangster in me wanted to meet him in the parking lot. And, you know, but I didn't. You mature. And you don't chase those juvenile-type pursuits. But, you know, I just share that with you because I think it's just so important. We talk about all the time, how do we figure out what matters most? Well, it's our families. And again, about being brainwashed, we are constantly fed that we're not doing enough for ourselves. Constantly. Constantly. It's like it's about you. You know, do what's best for you. Don't take this from anybody, you know. And there is some merit in all of that. But the thing that I have seen that's kind of in my lifetime that has changed, I remember in the 80s, as excessive as the 80s was, there was a lot of push about service, you know, what you can do. Remember Hands Across America and all that kind of stuff? And we had all these initiatives and things like that that promoted community spirit and promoted family and, you know, get out and do things with your family, for your family. But it just seems like we are constantly inundated about, you know, if you're not happy, then you need to wreck everybody else's life, you know, in order to find your own level of happiness. You know what I'm saying? It's just, and there, and that may sound a little bit, you know, hyperbole, but the reality of it is there's just a lot of people out there, and I have come across some of these people in my life within the last few years. Misery loves company. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Misery loves company. And there are some people out there that they are so incredibly miserable, they will be happier if you are miserable with them, right? And so don't listen to that. Don't take advice from people that aren't living a life that you wouldn't want to emulate. You know, if they don't have what you want, then don't do what they did to get what they have. So anyway, we're going to move forward. Listen, I thank you guys so much for all your support. I love each and every one of you. Everyone, whether you love me back or not, I love you anyway. And I may be the only person that says this to you today. You look great. You look great. Your hair looks great. Appreciate all the good things that you do in your life. And if you're not doing enough of those, it's not too late to write a happy ending, for sure. If you haven't done so, go to dutynoblebook.com. You get signed copies of all my sports titles. It's, of course, Flim Flam, Stark Villain, Alpha Dogs, Dog Pile, and The Dude. And you can get the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls, as well. Come float with us at True West Float Spa of Starville, 662-268-7601. If you have been a floater, we would appreciate a review or a Facebook post. Business is great, but you could always use more. But also, too, it's not even just that. It's just kind of sharing the magic of it all and the benefits of it with your friends. You know, they hear us say it. You know, they say, well, they got a vested interest. They own the business. Many of you float, or you have floated and found some great benefit in it. You can give a great testimonial to those folks and say, you know what, maybe you should try this. Maybe if you're a person that struggles, you know, with pain or anxiety, or you just need a reset, we may be able to help you. We've helped many others. Yeah. And come join us over at jeanspage.com. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.